Hello and welcome to today's episode of Natural Health with CNM, the College of Naturopathic Medicine. I'm your host, Michelle Sanchez. Today I'm joined by CNM's Director of Education, Bobby Qureshi, who is going to be talking to us about immune health. He'll be explaining how the immune system works and why we get infections. Bobby will also give his recommendations on the key nutrients and dietary and lifestyle steps to support the immune system. Bobby is an osteopath and naturopath, having completed a Master's of Osteopathy degree and training in naturopathic medicine at CNM. Bobby has obtained a wealth of clinical experience, working for osteopathic practices both in the UK and overseas. As well as teaching at master's level for a number of years, Bobby has also been a senior lecturer, teaching anatomy, physiology, pathology, nutrition and naturopathy at CNM since 2015. He is also the education director for the college, which involves him overseeing all the training programs that CNM has to offer. A large part of his role sees him develop and film lectures for the nutritional therapy and naturopathy diplomas. Hi, Bobby. How are you?
I'm really well, thank you. How are you, Michelle?
I'm great, thank you. Now, thanks so much for joining me today. It's great to have you back on the show.
Thank you. It's really good to be back. And I'm really thrilled, actually, to be asked to do this topic because it's an incredibly important topic right now. And it's really great to be back on. And hopefully this can prove to be useful for a lot of people who want to get a bit more informed on how to support their immune system.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And I know our listeners will appreciate hearing all your tips and advice on how to support the immune system naturally, because as you say, it couldn't be more fitting right now.
Absolutely.
But before we get started, can you please tell us a little bit about yourself and your experience in the industry and as a core member of the CNM team?
Of course. So I'm the education director for CNM, which basically involves me overseeing the various sort of educational functions of the college. I do spend a lot of my time now developing new courses and updating our existing courses, as well as doing some teaching, which I've been doing, I think, for about 7 years now. I love teaching. And I absolutely love being involved in, you know, education on a topic in an area that I'm so passionate about. In terms of my background in healthcare, I trained as an osteopath and went into a full-time osteopathic practice straight after my degree in 2013. And after doing my master's, really set up pretty much, you know, 5-6 days a week, seeing lots and lots of patients, which was amazing. And I loved that. I did sort of feel, though, during that time that there was a bit of a piece missing in the jigsaw. And that's when I found CNM and realized that I was, you know, those patients that I was maybe getting 70-80% better, finally fill that last 20-30%. And that was with the inclusion of nutrition and herbal medicine and basically naturopathic medicine. So yeah, I've been really fortunate to have studied a lot at CNM, and I've learned a huge amount since I've been here as well. And obviously that only benefits my clinic, my naturopathic practice. So yeah, that's pretty much a short overview of my clinical experience.
That's amazing, Bobby. And as you say, it is that missing link, isn't it? That dietary and lifestyle component. And I think once you have that, you get that sort of more rounded treatment protocol for the client.
Definitely, 100% agreed.
Now let's move on to immune health. Can you give us a brief overview of how the immune system works and all the jobs it has to do?
Yes, I think that's a good place to start, actually. I think it's fair to say that the immune system probably doesn't get the credit it deserves. It is a system in our body that is fundamental to our survival. Without it, we literally can't survive. What the immune system ultimately needs to do is mediate our relationship between the body and the outside world and everything that the outside world brings with it. And obviously that's a lot. That's, you know, different foods, that's different substances in the air, that's bacteria, that's viruses. There's a lot out there for our immune system to help our body sort of navigate through and respond appropriately to. Now, our immune system is a very clever system in that there are multiple layers to it. It's not just sort of a system that has one way of working. It has multiple facets to it. And the way we tend to break this down is that it's a system that has three layers. So it's good to be quite visual here. And whenever I teach this in the college, I'm always saying, you know, the first thing to imagine is that if you're trying to protect a location, you would build a big wall around it. You would build a fort. Mm-hmm. And that's basically what our skin is there to do. So our skin is something that we probably take for granted in that it is a really important immune barrier. And our skin internally carries on to become what we call this mucous membrane. And if you just feel the inside of your cheek, you'll feel that sort of very mucousy, lubricated lining. And that's a continuation of that barrier. So that's to stop things getting into our body that basically shouldn't be there. So that's the first part of our immune system. And if things go beyond that physical barrier, they start interacting with slightly more advanced aspects of our immune system. Now, what we then start interacting with are what I like to think of as basically police officers. They are cells that are traveling around the blood, looking for anything that doesn't seem to be quite right, and then overcoming them should we need to. So we're talking about cells here like phagocytes, which are cells that eat and engulf and swallow up foreign cells that they come into contact with. And the amazing thing is that these cells are eating up foreign cells all the time. And this is what I kind of mean about taking the immune system for granted. We are constantly fighting off things that we've come into contact with. It's not just when we feel a bit unwell that our immune system is working. It's working constantly, every second of every single day. And these phagocytes are a good example of cells that are constantly just monitoring, providing some surveillance for our body to make sure that if anything looks a little bit unpleasant, that we mop it up quickly. Now, in that sort of second layer, we have other things there. We have proteins that help us against viruses that are perhaps trying to cause an infection. We have lots of other bits and bobs in there as well. In terms of the third line of defense, this is where we get very, very fancy with our advanced specific immune response. So what I want you to think about here for anybody listening is that imagine that we're trying to fight something off, but we're maybe starting to lose the battle a little bit. That's when we need a very specific attack. So the way I tend to teach this in a lecture is that it's a bit like getting MI5 involved or the FBI. This is the very advanced part of our immune system. You know, the MI5 wouldn't deal with, you know, your average mugging or burglary. They would only be dealing with a specific threat that they've learned about. And that's what the third layer of defense is all about. It's all about specifically targeting threats that they've been alerted to, and at the same time, creating a memory to it. And that's the really important part, especially right now, because through natural infection, we will always create immune memory. And that memory will vary in terms of length. Sometimes it will be short, but generally our immune memory will be pretty long lasting. That's why, you know, when we're young and we get chickenpox, we don't keep getting chickenpox again through our life, because we've developed this immune memory against it. And our immune cells kind of look at it and go, oh, I've seen this before. And that's really our advanced immune system, which is made up of our T cells and our B cells, for anybody that's interested. So that's kind of a bit of an overview of those three layers. And probably what I should say as well on top of this is that out of our entire immune system, 70% of it is in our gut, which is a great fact, because immediately it makes us think that if our gut health is not working well, or we're imbalanced in our gut health, then immediately our immune system is compromised. And the question I would ask is, you know, your average person, are they in a case of having good gut health or bad gut health? And from my clinical experience, I would absolutely be leaning towards bad. And I'm sure from your experience too, Michelle, you would probably agree.
Absolutely. No, and thank you for mentioning the gut health. I think that's a really, really important point that a lot of people might not be aware of, and sometimes it gets forgotten. So no, thank you for that. And for that fantastic explanation of the immune system. I think when people can actually, when you use those little analogies and sort of create that picture in somebody's mind, like as in they are the police force kind of thing, that really helps to help people understand, because it is quite a complex body system, isn't it?
It is, absolutely. And it's doing so much for us to keep us living and to keep us healthy. And, it's constantly working away. So we need to make sure that what we're doing is supporting the health of our immune system, because we can't take its job for granted. It's a very complex job, as you put it well.
No, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Now, can you please explain what an infection is and why we get infections?
Great question. This understanding is so crucial. And I think this is where a lot of people that I come into contact with or have done since COVID began have really not understood what infections are and how infections occur. Now, there is this understanding in society generally that we're led to believe that basically microbes, which are things like bacteria and viruses and fungus and so on, or we can call them bugs, are single-handedly responsible for infections. Now, this is a very conventional view of infections. And what I mean by that is that this belief system that viruses or bacteria or whatever they might be are single-handedly responsible for an infection, which is where we have an overgrowth of these different organisms, it's quite an outdated view that doesn't take into account some really important points. Now, just to give a bit of a background to this, because I think this is quite important, this belief system really came about through the sort of 1800s when a French biologist, a man that many of you may have heard of, Louis Pasteur, developed something called the germ theory. Now, he was a scientist basically looking at these different germs, and he basically put forward this idea that germs are responsible for disease. And he went on to develop the pasteurization technique, hence the word pasteurization. It comes from his name. Now, around the same time, there was a French scientist called Antoine Bichamp, who put forth his own theory, which really rivaled that of Pasteur. And he sort of said, well, look, it's not about the germ, it's about the terrain. And this brings forth this idea, this theory of the terrain theory. And he basically said, it's not about the germ, it's about the person. And I think terrain actually was a great choice of word that he used, because he was really referring to the overall kind of health, the environment, the resilience of the individual. You know, think terrain, think soil or earth. And Bichamp basically said, well, look, you know, germs seek diseased tissue rather than being the cause of diseased tissue. So he kind of challenged it and put forth this very different idea. And what was interesting is that this could be very simply argued by saying, well, if you were in a room with a group of people and you were equally exposed to the same virus that somebody had as an infection, why is it that only some people get ill and others don't? I mean, how many times have you heard this, Michelle, in the last 18 months or 2 years? People saying, you know, it's really weird because, you know, I was around so-and-so that had COVID and so-and-so came down with it, but I didn't. That's because we're all different. We're all individual. Our immune systems operate differently. Now, this idea of the terrain and the terrain theory actually has been put forth has been around for a very long time. And even Hippocrates famously said, and I love this quote, I really love this quote. He said, it is important to know what sort of person has a disease rather than to know what sort of disease a person has. I think that's crucial. And actually, we've got that in the wall in our CNM London campus. And I love it. And I always draw students' attention to it because we are different and we have to recognize and embrace that individuality. And when it comes to the immune system, we need to think about the person, the resilience, the context, rather than just the germ. Now, another good analogy for this is, and I've seen a few pictures that have circulated, I think it's quite clear. If you imagine a fish in a fish tank and the water is really dirty and, you know, diseased, if we want to call it that, the question would be, do you medicate the fish or do you clean the tank? I mean, that's a perfect analogy of the immune system. You know, if somebody is constantly getting ill because their immune system is not doing its job and the environment is not supporting the immune response, then, you know, do we medicate that person or do we support their environment, clean up that environment and nourish it? And that's really what we're talking about. So when we get an infection, the terrain has allowed that infection to occur. And the way I would think of it, let's just say you get the flu. You know, you're not ill because you've got the flu. You were ill and that's why you got the flu. Does that make sense? I hope that makes sense anyway. Obviously, you know what I'm trying to get across here, Michelle.
No, absolutely. It really does. And I love that fish analogy, Bobby, because I think that's a really great way to explain it. Because that's it. Do you medicate the fish or do you clean up the environment? And that's exactly what the terrain theory and you know, what you've been discussing about, you know, our soil. We need to keep that, you know, nutrient rich. We need to keep it clean. We need to, you know, give our body the best chance to be able to fight these infections.
Definitely. Absolutely. I mean, that's a really fundamental concept. And I think if people understand that, and if people understand that we have the ability to change our immune system, to nourish and support our immune system, to provide defense, then we are much more empowered. And I think that's really a message I want to get across today, that we should feel empowered because we have the capacity to support our own bodies. You know, we have truly the capacity to boost our immune system. I mean, I've seen that term used a lot, boost your immune system. I mean, this topic today is truly how you boost your immune system. You clean up the tank, you support the terrain and that environment that gives you the defense.
Absolutely. And we're going to be giving our listeners lots of tips and advice on, you know, things that you can do to get started immediately. And thank you for explaining that, why some people get sick and others don't, because that was actually going to be my next question. So, because that's something I hear a lot. You know, people are like, oh, well, such as you say, such and such got COVID, such and such has been sick all winter on and off, and I've been absolutely fine and I've been around them. So I think that would be a question that will be in a lot of people's minds. So thank you for going over that, Bobby.
No problem. Absolutely fine. And obviously I know through this session, we'll talk more about the things that we can actually do to support our immune system and to stop us from being the one that always seems to come down with something.
Absolutely. Now, are there any particular dietary or lifestyle factors that lower immune function and make us more prone to infections?
Yes, absolutely. So I think I'll start actually with the lifestyle factor, because I think this is particularly important at the moment. Stress. Now, when we're in a state of stress, our body is changing how it is operating so that it focuses on what it would consider to be a priority. Now, obviously, going back a long time, the analogy or the example to give would be that if you were running away from a saber-toothed tiger, would you want to focus on your immune system whilst you're trying to save your life? Well, no. And so actually this inbuilt mechanism that we have in our body to prioritize systems based on whether we're stressed or relaxed is useful. But the problem is that the average person that we see, and certainly in my clinic that I see, is chronically stressed. So they end up having this constant immune suppression. So, you know, people will often refer to this as being run down. I'm really run down at the moment. And often it's because they're really stressed and their immune system is simply being depleted. I would also add to that, that from an emotional perspective, we are so much more vulnerable to infections when we are in fear. You know, when we're scared, we are ultimately depleting our immune system. We're not supporting it. We're not nourishing it. We're not empowering our immune system. And I think that's important because the messages that we do tend to hear are generally messages of fear, inciting fear in people, and not actually giving them the tools so that they can take control of their own health. So on a kind of an emotional level, I think that's important to straight away highlight. Also on a kind of a lifestyle level, sleep. Now, this is absolutely crucial. And, you know, sleep is something that we probably all take for granted. But the reality is that if we don't sleep well, our immune system takes a huge hit. And there's one really good study, actually, that was done a number of years ago now, where they looked at a group of people that were restricted in their sleep to 4 hours a night. And they compared it to people that had a really good night's sleep. And they found that the people that had 4 hours a night, for one night only, just to emphasize that, had a reduction in a type of immune cell called natural killer cells. And that reduction was 72% compared to the group that had a full night's sleep. And that's one night. So, wow. I mean, if you think about it, somebody that's chronically sleeping poorly is not going to have good levels of natural killer cells, which, by the way, are one of your immune system's best defense against cancer cells, against tumor cells. So it does make you realize that, you know, sleep is a basic physiological process that we've got to get right and we've got to support. For me in clinic, it's a foundation that if it's not working well with one of my clients, I put a huge amount of resources into getting that working quickly. From a dietary perspective, I mean, the typical kind of Western diet, which is rich in refined sugars and processed foods, is really, you know, one of the worst things that we can do in terms of supporting our immune system, because refined sugars, for example, you know, it depletes our immune system. Glucose and vitamin C kind of work competitively in our body. They actually share the same channel in our cells to get inside the cells. So if we're flooding ourselves with sugar, then that sugar's going to basically get in at the expense of vitamin C. So this is important, because when people say to me, you know, Bobby, I just don't get it, I'm not getting better, or I'm ill, and I'm taking, you know, lots of vitamin C a day, but I say to them, well, what are you eating? And if you're then going to, you know, eat a chocolate bar straight afterwards, well, you've just basically nullified the effects of that. So sugar is a huge one, in my opinion, probably the most important in terms of diet. We should probably also think about things like alcohol. You know, alcohol heavily depletes our body of antioxidants, which are very important components of our body that stop us from getting damage to cells, stop inflammation. Also things like exercise, and actually with exercise, you could argue that under-exercise and over-exercise can be bad for the immune system. So, I mean, most people are under-exercising. So that's where we put most of our focus in a clinic setting, because the average person is not exercising, not moving enough. So exercise is crucial, but we also don't want somebody to be exercising 4 hours a day, 7 days a week, because equally you will find that they will be more susceptible to infections. So those are big ones. I guess in terms of diet, we could also add in nutrient deficiencies. Again, a pretty bland Western diet is not going to be very rich in things like vitamin D, vitamin C, zinc, vitamin A. And, you know, these are all nutrients that fuel the immune system. So if we're not getting them in our diet, then our immune system will really take the hit. So they're definitely ones that I would be thinking about as well, in terms of, are we getting enough of them in our diet to nourish the immune system? So those are probably the immediate key ones that I would say in answer to your question.
Excellent. Thank you for those. And they all play into each other, don't they? I mean, look, stress has been a major factor in the last couple of years for so many people. And that fear plays into that, because obviously, you know, the media and all sorts of things that are going on externally. So causing that stress, causing people then have issues with their sleep, they're reaching for sugary snacks or caffeine or alcohol to wind them down at the end of the evening. So it's all sort of playing into each other, isn't it, really, all those dietary and lifestyle factors?
I agree, absolutely. And I think, in addition, what's made things even worse in the last sort of, you know, 2 years or so is that people now fear any germ. And it goes back to that germ theory. You know, they're scared of being in contact with anybody or anything. And, you know, when you wear masks constantly and when you're hand sanitizing constantly and you're not interacting with others, the implications at the end of the day will be that our immune system is not getting the exposure it needs. You know, our immune system relies on exposure, just like, you know, if you're learning to drive, you can't expect just to go and do your test without practicing. The immune system is exactly the same. So just thinking about, you know, what's going on right now, what concerns me is the long-term implications, especially for our kids who are not generally getting that exposure now that they should do. You know, when I was growing up, I'd have my face and hands in soil most of the day, and now it's different. I mean, we've been moving away from that kind of, you know, hands-on outdoors type upbringing for many people for a number of years, and that's shown in, you know, a great deal of research. But, you know, what about now? I mean, we've gone from being in a pretty bad position, but now to a pretty horrible position, really.
Absolutely, Bobby. I agree. I'm hearing a lot of that from kids as well. They're getting very fearful of all the germs and then not wanting to sort of get their hands dirty. So is that what you would call the hygiene hypothesis?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, that's the hygiene hypothesis. I mean, I remember when I was studying my master's degree, and this was really, you know, coming out in the research at the time, where we were finding that, you know, studies were supporting the idea that because our environments are more sterile now, we're more susceptible to immune-related problems like autoimmune conditions where the immune system attacks the body mistakenly, things like allergies. So yeah, this is something that we knew about very much pre-COVID. And I think therefore we now have to be thinking about, you know, the situation that we're in now, given what's happened with COVID, obviously.
Absolutely. Now, I just wanted to talk briefly about fevers, because a fever is a common symptom of an infection, and people often get confused about how they should manage a fever, especially with children. So can you please explain the purpose of a fever and how fevers should be managed correctly?
Yes, of course. So a fever is defined as having a core body temperature over 38 degrees Celsius, and it is a crucial part of our immune response. To be honest, I think that we should be respecting this amazing process that our body has. And instead, what we hear about fevers, it tends to be very much that they're very bad and they're negative and they're horrible and they're dangerous, etc. But we should really be thinking about how supportive a fever generally is for our immune system. For example, it supports the sort of specialization of certain immune cells like T cells. It really helps them to be more effective. It creates antiviral proteins. You know, it does a lot to support the immune response. And the slight issue here would be for me that so many people, we're led to believe that the first sign of a fever, we need to reduce it and we need to suppress it with antipyretics, you know, paracetamol, Calpol, etc. And that's done far too prematurely. And the problem is that not only are you suppressing the immune response, but you overall will probably end up having a slower recovery, potentially even having a more significant infection. So if that fever is kind of healthy, which we would generally regard as being 38 to 40 degrees Celsius for most, then, you know, that's something that we should just be supporting and nourishing rather than suppressing. So I definitely think we should be focusing on supporting a fever rather than suppressing it, because it is so important. And as long as, you know, we're keeping below the 40 degrees mark, unless, of course, you've got a young baby where at that point we absolutely would not, you know, their immune systems and their ability to regulate body temperature is not particularly good. So that's when they would absolutely need to see a medical practitioner. Otherwise, we should really be supporting it, not suppressing it.
Absolutely. No, thank you for explaining that, Bobby. I think that will really help a lot of our listeners, because I know that that's a question that comes up time and time again, especially with people with children. So thank you for that. Now, what are some natural solutions to support the body during an acute infection? And what can we do naturopathically through diet and lifestyle to boost immune health?
So great question. Okay, so my first thing would be when we have an acute infection is we've got to get the basics right. Now, the basics for me would be conserving energy and focusing our energy on the immune system, which means we need to rest. You know, our body is making us feel achy and unwell, partly for the reason that it wants us to rest and allow the immune system time to do its job. We need to hydrate well. That's really crucial, because, you know, our kidneys need to filter out all of the waste material adequately. Also, you know, having enough water helps to support the bowels and remove the removal of waste from the bowels. So keeping hydrated is crucial. In fact, actually, it's a very common dehydration, I should say, is a very common reason that when people are suffering with infectious illnesses, they are hospitalized. So it is a common reason as a sort of a complication. So we definitely need to keep hydrated. In terms of also conserving energy, we need to think about what we're ingesting. Now, basically, we need to only eat food if we are starving. And I would say that quite firmly. I think it's important that we look at what children do and what animals do when they are ill. They naturally fast. And as we get a bit older, we tend to hear that, you know, you need to eat to get your energy up, which, to be honest, is not something that I certainly live by. And I don't think that it's very well supported by what we know about physiology. 70% of your immune system is in your gut for a start. So if we're eating food all through the day, our digestive system is focused heavily on digesting food and not on the immune component of the gut. So that's a big thing. Also, you know, digestion generally does take a huge amount of energy out of our body. So we need to make sure that we are keeping food to a minimum. Now, if we do need to eat and you are really hungry, and your body's saying, yeah, I really need something, and you make that decision to eat, I would go for food that's really easy to digest and really nourishing. The best thing, in my opinion, would be either a soup or a broth. Now, obviously, in an ideal world, you could make your own soup. So you know that you're packing in lots of immune boosting, nutritious foods. You know, I mean, whenever I meal, I actually quite enjoy getting a soup made for me by my other half, and she'll, you know, throw in lots of garlic and onions and vegetables and mushrooms and turmeric and ginger and peppers and sweet potato. I mean, it just sort of all gets thrown in there, which is amazing. And I think, you know, that sort of nutrient dense, easy to digest food, so we don't demand too much of the digestive system, is what we really need to be focusing on. The other thing I would say is avoid dairy products, because dairy products are mucus forming. So if you've got a respiratory illness, you know, you've got a cough or a sore throat, dairy, not only is it going to make you produce more mucus and potentially slow your recovery down, but it can also create inflammation, which is not what we want when we're trying to support the immune system. So that's kind of the basics. I would also add to that as well, actually, just as an additional point, sleep. I think we've got to make sure we're sleeping well and sleeping enough and going with the flow, surrendering to, you know, what we're suffering with. I think it's actually really important that we also keep our window open at least a little bit when we're sleeping, because, you know, we need oxygen, we need fresh air, we need circulating air, not stagnant air, when we're trying to fight off an infection through the night. So I also think, you know, opening the window is a really important, simple, basic thing. So those for me would be the basics, what I would consider the basics. And you've got to get those right. Otherwise, you're going to hinder your immune response.
Some fantastic tips there, Bobby. And I couldn't agree more. You know, rest and hydration and, you know, not eating are really, really key. And as you say, children and animals are very, very good at that. But adults are not so good, because, as you said, you know, we feel like we need to eat, but I think not eating is key, and only when necessary. So thank you for that. Now, are there any key nutrients or herbs or homeopathic remedies you recommend to support the immune health?
Absolutely, yes. So I think let's start with vitamin D. This is, you know, the great immune regulator. It balances the immune system. It really helps to support so many aspects of our immune system. It's quite a wonderful all-round vitamin. Now, for this, obviously, we can look at our diet and we can try and make sure we get vitamin D sources from there. So, you know, animal foods, we might be looking at oily fish, might be looking at organic eggs, cod liver oil, for example. We can get sort of the precursor, which is the earlier form of vitamin D, from mushrooms as well. But I guess really vitamin D we get from sunlight, first and foremost. That's where most of vitamin D should come from. So make sure that we're getting outdoors where possible generally to support vitamin D levels. And this is where we could also consider looking at supplementation. Now, as a general kind of recommendation for daily prevention, you're probably looking around about 1 to 2,000 IUs a day. But if you have been tested and your vitamin D levels are definitely deficient, then you can definitely look at higher levels, like 5 to 10,000 IUs a day. But generally, this is best to get advised by, you know, a nutritional therapist or a naturopath or somebody who can guide you as to what you specifically need. So that's vitamin D. Vitamin C, absolutely crucial in terms of the immune system. It supports various layers to the immune system. And this is also a key antioxidant. And this is one that is important for prevention, but also for an acute infection. Now, generally for prevention, there are so many different views on this. Personally, I think 1 to 2 grams a day of vitamin C is probably enough for prevention, but there's not much harm in going a bit higher than that, because if we reach a higher level of vitamin C, the body just tends to tell you that by making your bowels quite loose. So that's when you know you've probably gone a bit too high. If you're actively suffering with an infection, then you can go higher with your vitamin C, and you might be looking at levels more like sort of 10,000 IUs a day. The best advice I can probably say here, or best couple of bits of advice, is first of all, split the dose through the day, because you'll only absorb so much. So, you know, try and maybe have 1,000 IUs hourly if you really need to a few days of extra support. And also get a good form of vitamin C. So, your standard kind of ascorbic acid you can use. Personally, I quite like using liposomal vitamin C. Liposomal is a fat-based vitamin C that's really well absorbed. So that's a kind of a tip there. Zinc has multiple immune supporting effects. It supports immune health. It supports the skin barrier as well. That's an important one, zinc, and the mucous membrane barrier. And we can think of, again, looking at zinc rich foods, you know, things like sesame seeds, different legumes and beans, oats, oysters. You know, oysters are actually a really rich source of zinc. We can also supplement with zinc, and you're probably looking on average about 15 milligrams a day, perhaps more for prevention, perhaps 30 milligrams a day if you're actively unwell. I should have also said as well, with vitamin C, just in terms of food sources, you're basically looking at your kind of fresh raw fruit and vegetables ideally. So things like peppers, all your currants and berries and citrus fruits, but also things like cruciferous vegetables, things like broccoli and cauliflower are great sources of vitamin C. And probably the final of the four key vitamins and minerals that I would always go for here would be vitamin A, which is very important for the immune system. Probably doesn't get spoken about enough, actually. It boosts our white blood cell levels. It helps to tighten up the skin barrier and the mucous membrane barrier, a bit like zinc. We might be looking at food here. Of course, we tend to try as best as possible to start with food before supplementing. So we can look at animal sources of vitamin A, like fish and liver is a very, very rich source of vitamin A. But also we can look at our plant sources of vitamin A, and these plant sources of vitamin A basically have to be converted to the very final form of vitamin A in the body, but they're still great sources. So things like your dark green vegetables, your sort of yellow orange vegetables, carrots, squash, sweet potato are great sources. So those are kind of my nutrients, I would say, that I would say are musts for me. So the next thing that I probably would recommend would be probiotics. Now, probiotics are basically just good bacteria, and these are bacteria that we can get from foods. So we can obtain these from fermented foods, things like sauerkraut or kombucha or kefir. They're all good sources of probiotics. We can also supplement with probiotics. These are, the most amazing ways really of supporting our immune system, because as I said before, we have 70% of our immune system in our gut. And we also have roughly 100 trillion bacteria in our gut. So, you know, bacteria are very much our friends most of the time, and we need to be nourishing them, because what's important to understand is that all of those immune cells that live in our digestive system are literally a millimeter away from 100 trillion bacteria. And that interaction is not there just by chance. It's there because these white blood cells, these immune cells, are learning from these bacteria. So it's really important to understand that probiotics can be really beneficial for supporting the immune system. And we're looking for really good strains in there, like Lactobacillus, Bifidobacterium. You know, these are good sort of general strains that nourish the immune system. So they work really well. We can also look at prebiotics, which are basically food substances that feed the bacteria. So we can be looking at things like, you know, chicory is a great example, garlic, onions. So we can get those in the diet as well. What I would also recommend is looking at herbal medicines, and probably the one that most people have heard of is echinacea. Now, echinacea is a wonderful, wonderful herb that acts to modulate the immune system. And what I basically mean by modulate the immune system is that it helps to balance out the immune response. So it helps to kind of lessen the immune response when it's overactive, and it helps to support and boost the immune system when it's underactive. So it's a really nice all-rounder for the immune system. Now, echinacea is a plant that many people will actually have in their garden. It's called purple coneflower. It's a beautiful plant. And we use the root of that as the part of the herb that's very much medicinal. It's got all of the amazing plant compounds. And the great thing with echinacea is that it's been proven to increase our levels of phagocytes, which are those cells I mentioned earlier, the ones that eat up those foreign cells. I like to think of phagocytes a bit like Pac-Man, you know, the old video game when he would be running around eating things up. So that's basically what echinacea helps to support. Now, you can get echinacea in your average health food shop, generally in the form of capsules, sometimes liquid. In an ideal world, we would be using this in the form of what we call a tincture, which is a liquid form of echinacea, which tends to be the best form of it. Now, most of the time, the only way you're going to access good quantities of this will be via a herbalist. So you can either see a herbalist. Obviously, if you're listening to this thinking that you've got a passion in herbal medicine, then of course you can go into herbal medicine yourself. It's always good to know a herbalist, because you can access these sorts of herbs very easily. But echinacea is a great all-rounder. You can also use things like elderberry. Now, the elder plant, actually, the leaves and the berries are very medicinal. And, you know, here in the UK, we're exposed to elder very much through the warmer months, especially. And we can access the berries there, and we can make elderberry syrup. Now, elderberry, I remember actually going back to the start of COVID, I remember actually trying to source elderberry from the place I would normally get them from, if we don't sort of pick them locally. And I remember them being sold out for months, because it was this big thing. Everybody had worked out that elderberry is this amazing immune boosting antiviral herb. But luckily now it seems to be back on the shelves, which is good. But if you do get hold of some berries, all you need to do with this is basically get something like a cup of fresh berries, and basically put them in a saucepan, cover them with water, and boil them, simmer them for sort of 15 minutes or so. And then what you do is you strain it and you add in some honey, which helps to make it quite nice sort of tasting. And also at the same time, honey is medicinal, as long as you get, you know, a good quality of honey. So you can make a nice elderberry syrup, which is good for kids as well. It tastes nice, and it's very well known for its sort of antiviral properties. The other sort of, I mean, there are many other herbs you can go for. I quite like using herbs like thyme. And the great thing with thyme is that we all have thyme, you know, in our gardens or very easily accessible to us. Thyme contains this essential oil that gives it that strong fragrance called thymol. And actually, you've probably seen before that thyme is quite a common ingredient in mouthwashes. And the reason they use it in mouthwashes and some toothpaste is that thymol is quite good at sort of getting rid of things that you don't want, basically. So it's quite a good, we'd call it an antimicrobial agent. So you can make up, you know, a thyme tea, literally just by infusing fresh thyme in boiled water for sort of 10 minutes and drinking it. You can obviously include thyme in your food. And another herb that I tend to use a fair amount for, especially for fevers, actually, would be yarrow. Now, yarrow is a herb that you'll see all around in the warmer months, with the sort of the white tops. It's a lovely plant, and it really grows. I mean, around where I live, it's literally abundant everywhere. And yarrow is good in that it helps to support a fever. It helps to actually promote sweating. And if you can get some fresh yarrow, you can simply just, again, infuse that in some boiling water and drink that through the day. And you can add in, you know, if you've got some peppermint, you can add that in. If you've got a bit of ginger root, you can grate some ginger up in there. And that sort of, you know, mix of a tea infusion can work, you know, beautifully. The other thing that I'd say slightly obsessed with, actually, I know my students tend to giggle when I mention mushrooms because I do have a slight obsession with them. Our mushroom family tend to provide us with some wonderful properties that are very much medicinal. And we're talking here about truly medicinal mushrooms, mushrooms like reishi, shiitake, maitake. You know, these are mushrooms that are now getting a huge amount of research done, which are kind of showing their amazing health benefits. Now, mushrooms are part of the fungal species. I think from my memory, there are roughly about 20,000 fungal species that are mushrooms. And I think about 1,000 of those mushrooms are considered very much medicinal. And the ones that we tend to go for to support the immune system are things, are mushrooms like reishi, maitake, shiitake. Probably my all-round favourite is reishi mushroom, which is, for those of you that are looking to spell this, it's spelled R-E-I-S-H-I. And it's a beautiful mushroom, actually, to look at. And it's referred to as the mushroom of eternal youth, which I think is always a, you know, a selling point for people that are looking for anything healthy aging. And it's been used, I mean, you know, reishi's been used for the best part of 2,000-3,000 years in parts of Asia. And, you know, the medicinal properties have been known for a long time. But what these mushrooms have in them is these various compounds that are really immune supporting. The main ones that they contain are called beta-glucans. And beta-glucans are basically what you find within the cell walls of these fungus, of these mushrooms. And they're really immune boosting. They, you know, they support various aspects of the immune system. They also feed our healthy bacteria in the gut. You know, they have anti-tumor properties. They are just amazing. You can probably start to hear my slight geekiness with mushrooms now. So yeah, we're looking for reishi that you can generally purchase now in the form of capsules. That's probably one of the easiest ways to get these into your diet. Also, I mean, I use capsules of mushrooms, but I also use reishi powder. I've got a reishi powder that I use in things like hot drinks. I use it in soups. I use it in smoothies, and just put, you know, a teaspoon a day into my food, which works really well. So those are, I would say, my nutrients and herbs. I think you also asked about homeopathic remedies. So just to give you a couple of little recommendations there. Probably the main one, if I'm honest, actually, that I use more than anything. If you ever come down ill, if you ever know that you're coming down with something and you've got that sore throat or you're starting to feel achy and you just know, you think, oh goodness, here I go, I'm about to be ill. The best homeopathic remedy that you can use is a remedy called aconite, which is spelt A-C-O-N-I-T-E. And it's an amazing remedy. I mean, it's used so well for kind of nipping the early stages of an infection in the bud. And you generally want to use a potency which is 30C. So that's normally how it's written, aconite 30C. And that's when you get that very sudden sort of feeling of, oh, I'm starting to feel a bit groggy. And you can actually take that quite regularly after starting to feel unwell. You can take that up to, you know, every hour or so. It's also very good if you've just developed a fever, especially with kids. It's a really nice, quick remedy to use. So I would say that in terms of homeopathy, if you want a key remedy that works beautifully, probably aconite. The other remedy that I use that's homeopathic quite frequently with illness, especially since COVID, has been a remedy called gelsenium, which is spelled G-E-L-S-E-N-I-U-M. And that's a really good kind of flu type remedy. So, you know, when you get the real achiness and you just feel so achy and uncomfortable, that's gelsenium, and you can do the same thing there. So you may want to take that perhaps, you know, every sort of hour initially, but you may then look to taking that perhaps something like three times a day. So those are probably the two homeopathic remedies that I would use the most. So those are my key kind of nutrient herb homeopathic recommendations if you need to support your immune system.
Wow, amazing. Some fantastic advice and tips there, Bobby. So thank you. I think you covered all the main ones and more. So thank you for that. And I think I also have a mushroom obsession because, as you say, the medicinal mushrooms are fantastic. And not only do they support the immune system, but also, you know, energy. They're really great for stress, cognition, performance. So, yeah, I also have a teaspoon of those in my tea in the morning. So, yeah, definitely makes a difference. And some great herbs as well. I would also like to add in propolis is another fantastic herb with, you know, antiviral and immune boosting properties. But you just have to be careful if you do have any allergies to bee products or honey. So, and fermented foods as well is another great one because you mentioned the probiotics, but in terms of a food, so fermented foods also naturally contain those probiotics. So things like sauerkraut and kimchi. But we do have lots of information on the website in terms of blogs, you know, a guide to fermenting and, you know, foods and herbs to boost the immune system. So we'll pop all of those links in the show note and all the things and herbs and homeopathic remedies that Bobby mentioned today.
Perfect. That's amazing. And I was in the college in London yesterday, and we have our natural chef course, and they just made up big batches of kombucha, and they were just actually looking at how they could use kombucha in these different recipes. And it was just amazing. It's so flavorsome, and the way they'd use the kind of the sour flavor that come through from the different fermented foods into the the salads and the hummus and the various things they were making up was amazing. So yeah, it's a great thing to learn more about. I think fermented foods is kind of the way to go at the moment. It's a hot topic.
It really is. And they taste so yummy as well. And you know, kombucha, another one of my addictions. but we do have a great course, an introduction to fermentation as well, like a workshop that the Natural Chef team runs. So keep an eye out on the website for the next one of those where you can learn, you know, easy tips and tricks to create your own fermented foods at home. Now, to finish up, Bobby, I'd like to ask you, what is your top tip for boosting immune health? And are there any particular CNM courses you would recommend for anyone wanting to learn about immune health? So in terms of the tip, because I know you've covered lots and lots of things today, what would be, you know, the one big takeaway from today?
Good question. So I think the main takeaway point would be about the terrain. I think if there's one point I can get across to listeners from this podcast would be understand that, you know, you have the control over your health and nobody can take that away from you. As long as you're supporting your terrain, as we've discussed with, you know, a good diet, a nice, you know, good naturopathic diet, rich in, you know, whole foods and, you know, trying to reduce your refined sugars and trying to cut out alcohol and, you know, focusing on exercising and sleeping well and reducing your stress, kind of getting all those core pillars in place. I think if you can really optimize your terrain, then that ultimately is what's going to provide you with immune defense. In terms of, you know, perhaps a key nutrient takeaway probably would be vitamin D. I think, you know, especially here in the UK, so many people are vitamin D deficient and they just really don't have any clue that they are. So I think given that we don't tend to get great deals of sunlight through the year, you know, it makes sense that we are going to be quite vulnerable to that. And vitamin D is just so crucial when it comes to the immune system. And I remember early days, you know, with COVID, it had kind of been mentioned that vitamin D was important and that it has immune supporting properties and that it's protective against COVID, etc. But the reality is that, you know, these nutrients and these herbs, etc., they don't work to kill an infection. They work to support the immune system. And if you're supporting the immune system and supporting the terrain, then you're providing your body with the best defense that you can possibly give it.
I completely agree. Vitamin D, Bobby, is absolutely crucial. And for anyone wanting any more information, we do have quite a comprehensive article on the blog about vitamin D. And in Bobby's other podcast on back pain. He also talks about vitamin D in a lot more detail. So go and check that one out too. Now, Bobby, are there any particular courses you would recommend for anyone wanting to learn more about immune health or nutrition or herbs?
Absolutely, yeah. So I think if you're interested in learning about how the immune system works, then probably the best course for you initially would be How the Body Works, where you learn about, you know, those three layers of defense, and you learn that in more detail. If you're interested more in the nutrition strategies for immune health, then definitely our Nutrition for Everyday Living course. That's a really good sort of all-rounder for you understanding, you know, what is actually meant by a good diet? How can we nourish the immune system? Where do we get these, you know, nutrients from in our diet? Which foods can we increase? And how do we detox, etc.? Which is all great material. If you want to take that further, then absolutely one of our diploma courses. So nutrition, naturopathic nutrition, our diploma in it is a really thorough insight into how you can truly work with individuals to support their immune system, and you'll learn a lot there about the strategies that you can use and employ, and different types of testing you can use. So that's more if you want to kind of help others. I would say if you really want to work with clients and help others, that's where you could work. But of course, I've mentioned a lot of herbs today. So, you know, we've got a herbal medicine for sort of everyday living course, which is a really good short course if you just want a bit of a taster about the different key herbs that you can use, and where you find them and dosages, etc. And again, obviously from that, if you were really interested in herbal medicine, we do have a diploma in herbal medicine where, you know, if you want to work to make up herbs, to dispense herbs, to work with people on an individual basis and actually prescribe these herbs and improve their health, then obviously that's another option for you. So there's plenty of courses that we have where you can learn about immune health.
Absolutely. You know, some great courses. And the great thing about the short courses is that they can be done online or in class, the same as the diploma courses as well. So they are very flexible study programs so that can fit around your lifestyle. So yeah, CNM has some amazing courses. There's something for everyone.
Agreed. Absolutely.
Well, that's all we've got time for today. Thanks for listening, and a big thank you to Bobby for sharing his wealth of knowledge with us. You can find all the information discussed today and more about Bobby in the show notes on the CNM website at www.cnmpodcast.com. And if you're interested in learning more about nutrition, herbal medicine or homeopathy, check out CNM's range of short courses and diploma training on the CNM website at www.naturopathy-uk.com. We have a series of open events coming up in the next few months, and you can find all the details in the events section on the website. Thanks so much for joining us today. If you enjoyed the show, make sure you subscribe through your favourite podcatcher so you don't miss any future episodes. While you're there, we'd love it if you could leave us a rating or review, as this helps us when creating new content.